Winchester 223 assault rifle. It was one of four guns Adam Lanza took from the home he shared with his mother after he shot and killed her. Sources say he left one gun in his car and forced his way into the school carrying the assault rifle in his hands and two semi-automatic pistols in the dark military-style cargo pants he was wearing.
CBS News Homeland Security correspondent Bob Orr, some of those victims shot as many as 11 times, many at point-blank range. Activist reports from Syria indicate fighter jets today bombed the Palestinian Yarmouk camp in Damascus, killing at least 25 people, all hiding in a mosque in an area where Syrian rebels have been trying to advance into the capital. The latest battlefield accounts cannot be independently verified due to tight restrictions on media access to Syria. With both sides claiming victory, Egyptian officials say the referendum on a proposed constitution is being approved. Those opposed fear that the document will amplify and deepen divisions. A close win, if eventually confirmed, would give Islamist President Mohamed Morsi only limited cause for celebration. Japanese Prime Minister Yoshihiko Noda resigning as head of the Democratic Party of Japan, taking responsibility for the party's loss in elections for seat in parliament today. This is CBS News.
Here's the latest from the WCRN newsroom. Five zones off the New England coast were closed to fishermen nearly two decades ago to protect deteriorating species. Now a fishing industry in crisis wants to get back in. Regional regulators will decide on Thursday whether some fishermen should be allowed to ask for permission to fish in those closed areas. The mother of missing toddler Ayla Reynolds is continuing to call attention to the child's disappearance a year ago from her father's home in Waterville, Maine. Trista Reynolds and Lost and Missing sponsored a Shining Hope for Ayla event yesterday at the Riverton Community Center in Portland. Ayla was 20 months old when she was reported missing on the morning of December 17th. Police have called it a crime, but have made no arrests. Forecasts from the Weather Center calling for snow and rain today are high in the 30s. Freezing rain tonight, the low in the 30s. Rain and drizzle for tomorrow, high in the 40s. Rain tomorrow night, low in the 30s. And rain ending on Tuesday, the high in the 40s.
Flynn Law Firm is focused on helping those seriously injured in workplace, construction, motor vehicle, and other accidents throughout Massachusetts. Bob Flynn has over 35 years' experience investigating, preparing, trying, and settling serious injury and wrongful death cases. If you or a loved one is injured in an accident at work or at a construction site or while driving, call Flynn Law Firm at 781-239-1005 for a free confidential appointment to discuss your case at a location convenient to you. Flynn Law Firm has its main office in Wellesley with offices by appointment in Boston, Worcester, and Springfield. Call 781-239-1005. You can learn more about Flynn Law Firm by visiting its website, flynnlawfirm.com, or by calling 781-239-1005. Put the knowledge and experience of Flynn Law Firm to work for you. Call 781-239-1005.
Hank Stoltz and Sherman Whitman, Tom Cuddy on sports, and meteorologist Mark Rosenthal with the latest weather forecast. The WCRN Morning News. Tomorrow morning at 5 on News and Talk Radio, WCRN.
It's time for Talking About the Law with attorney Bob Flynn.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. This is Talking About the Law, and I'm Bob Flynn. Our show focuses each week on a new topic in the law. The show is sponsored by Cattuno Court Reporting, which, in my view, is probably the best court reporting company in the country. Certainly, it's well-known throughout New England and well-respected. And the show is brought to you, as you heard, by Flynn Law Firm, which is focused on representing people seriously injured in accidents at work or otherwise throughout the state. Each week on Talking About the Law, we have a guest who discusses a particular topic based on their experience and their focus of their law career. We've learned all sorts of information from environmental lawyers, criminal lawyers, First Amendment lawyers, and we also have people as guests who focus their career on related aspects, related fields connected to the law, private investigators, structured settlement people, court clerks, sheriffs, and collectively we try to focus each week and throughout the year on topics that are of interest to you that have to do with the third branch of government, the judicial system, and the lawyers and those others that serve that system. Today, our topic is going to focus on medical malpractice, dental malpractice, what it is, what it is not. We've had programs on the bodily injury world, generally accident cases. But today, we're going to hone in on one aspect of it, and we'll talk about what that system can do for a person injured as a result of medical error and what it can't do, and some of the many issues, including a new health care bill that addresses medical malpractice issues. Our guest today is an extremely experienced trial lawyer, Frank Riccio from Braintree, who has a unique perspective on all of these issues because he is a trained and practiced dentistry for many, many years. He's a healthcare provider and an attorney, although has focused his career since becoming a lawyer on the preparation and trial of cases like the ones we're going to talk about today. Frank, welcome again to Talking About the Law.
Thank you so much. Frank, thanks for having me.
Well, it's a thrill to have you, and it's great to get a perspective from somebody who has a foot in both camps, so to speak. How does that play out for you?
Well, it plays out pretty well, only because I not only understand the legal issues, I also understand the medical issues that are involved and how the whole medical and legal system operate.
But you bring the perspective of somebody who's actually worked in the healthcare profession, and then you overlay it with an ability to look at what the tort system can and can't do for somebody who's been injured.
Yes, that's correct.
So what can it do? What is the purpose of what we as lawyers do in trying to bring these kinds of cases?
Well, the purpose is actually threefold. First of all, you have a constitutional right to bring a claim, a so-called tort claim, against a health provider. Secondly, it allows you to get compensation for the injury that you sustained or thirdly, what it does is it also helps in terms of improving health care, in terms of, if anything, elevating the standards or the standards of care in terms of how patients receive treatment. And so, you know, basically those are the three reasons. You know, it's actually a good thing and works well. It goes back many, many years.
The number one immediate purpose priority is obviously for any lawyer, his own client, and seeking compensation for the client. And that compensation, that's what it is. The system is not intended, is it, to punish people as a general?
No, it's not. And the thing is that, you know, unfortunately, if somebody's been hurt or someone loses a family member, there's no way to bring them back. And so what society has done, and this actually goes back to the Roman times, is they decided that the way to do it is to pay someone monetary compensation to right a wrong. And again, the wrong is not an intentional act. It's really what they call a negligent act in terms of somebody carelessly causing someone harm. The fact that something bad happens doesn't necessarily mean anybody was negligent. So the court system was designed in such a way that people who get compensation have to allege and then prove that the person who harmed them was negligent. And so it's a system that has gone, you know, back to the Justinian Code, I mean, English common law, and, you know, we follow the English common law system, or at least part of it. And so basically, it's a fair system and works.
The concept is absolutely the same as people involved outside the studio in an intersectional collision, somebody running a red light, causing a serious injury to another party. we kind of understand and expect that compensation is paid to whoever suffered a serious injury.
Yeah, and I mean, basically, it's not only economic compensation for medical bills or lost wages or that type of thing, which can be very significant, but also, you know, it very wisely also took into account the fact that there is compensation for pain and suffering, which is another component of any type of injury. And again, the key in this is, you know, you have to prove negligence. You just can't go out there, put your hand out and say, I want compensation. It's not a no-fault system, and especially in the area of medical negligence.
I like to think of this whole general topic of the tort system and compensation in terms of backing up. If you're in a supermarket, it sounds silly, but if you are in a supermarket and you're pushing your carriage and you're going down an aisle and somebody comes flying down the next aisle and hits your carriage, everybody expects and anticipates that other person will say, oh, I'm sorry, I was going too fast. If, in fact, you're in a car and the same thing happens and the property is the car's damaged, we all expect and anticipate that they don't drive away and leave you with a $3,000 repair bill on your car, that they'll take care of the repair bill. And if you have somebody in the car, one of your children who's injured, the system logically goes the same direction, and you expect and anticipate that through the system, your child can't be healed and like it never happened, but some compensation, it's the only way of preventing, some compensation will be paid so the child doesn't just walk away and you don't walk away, bearing the entire burden of the pain and the suffering and the medical bills and the wages.
Yeah, it's kind of a rough justice, but again, it works. I mean, I see a lot of clients who are angry at their doctors for whatever reason. And so in a way, what happens is when they come to us to see if they have a lawsuit, they're kind of taking that anger and dissipating it so they don't go directly against the doctor to cause them physical harm. I mean, some people are angry enough. What they do is by working through the system, we reasonably and rationally give them an idea as to whether or not there was negligence, because the reality is they may be wrong. And you know, in terms of my own practice, probably about 90% of the people who come to me are wrong in terms of that assessment. But in order to do that, we as lawyers have to do an investigation. And many times people get more facts from us than they do from the medical providers. And, you know, to our detriment as lawyers, because we do this for no charge, many times we put a lot of work and time into a case and realize that looking at the facts and looking at the evidence, there isn't a case to bring forward. And I would say with most medical negligence attorneys who are reputable, they're probably turning away about 90% of the claims that come to them. So the system works.
What I've found, too, is that people who come to a lawyer about a medical malpractice case that they think they may have are really happy to get the news from the lawyer that, you know, you really don't have a case. It would appear there was no medical error. And those cases where there is, they move on. When we come back, we're going to be going to a quick break. Let's talk briefly about the other goal, the salutary goal of improving the healthcare system, like we improved automobile design, product design through this tort system. This is Bob Flynn talking about the law with attorney Frank Riccio of Braintree. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back. Cotugno Court Reporting and Stentel Transcription provides complete litigation support services to the legal community. These services include traditional court reporting, legal dictation and transcription, client meeting rooms and conference rooms. They also have video conferencing suites that use broadcast quality HD connections, perfect for meetings and interviews. Depositions can be conducted in their offices, or they can arrange alternate locations and have the option of high-quality professional videography. They also provide the legal community with the option of Lawyers Conference Center membership. For a low monthly rate, members have access to use all five of their offices for their meetings and receive special discounts on most of their services. Cotugno Court Reporting, with offices in Springfield, Boston, Worcester, Providence, and Chelmsford. Visit them on the web at cotugno.us. That's CATUOGNO.US. Or call them at 888-228-8646. Cotugno Court Reporting.
Hank Stoltz and Sherman Whitman, the WCRN Morning News. Tomorrow morning at 5 on News and Talk Radio, WCRN.
Flynn Law Firm is focused on helping those seriously injured in workplace, construction, motor vehicle, and other accidents throughout Massachusetts. Bob Flynn has over 35 years' experience investigating, preparing, trying, and settling serious injury and wrongful death cases. If you or a loved one is injured in an accident at work or at a construction site or while driving, call Flynn Law Firm at 781-239-1005 for a free confidential appointment to discuss your case at a location convenient to you. Flynn Law Firm has its main office in Wellesley with offices by appointment in Boston, Worcester, and Springfield. Call 781-239-1005. You can learn more about Flynn Law Firm by visiting its website, flynnlawfirm.com, or by calling 781-239-1005. Put the knowledge and experience of Flynn Law Firm to work for you. Call 781-239-1005. To be on the program, call 508-438-0965. 508-438-0965. Now, back to Talking About the Law with attorney Bob Flynn.
Welcome back. This is Talking About the Law, and again, I'm Bob Flynn. Our guest today is Frank Riccio, and we're talking about medical and dental malpractice cases. And just before the break, Frank, we were talking about the purposes of the tort or accident system as relates to medical malpractice and the other kinds of accidents. One, we talked about, you were telling us about compensation. The other is this more systemic improvement of safety in the medical healthcare field.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, medical centers and physicians, nurses, dentists, whatever, are obviously focused somewhat on risk management and on liability. And nobody really wants a case filed against them. And so as part of their procedures and protocols, they're looking at ways to making healthcare safe or safe as they practically can. And sometimes lawsuits kind of accelerate that process. And the example that I think really, really works is on breast cancer screening. And follow up on lumps. 10 or 15 years ago, I would see a fairly large number of breast cancer cases where biopsies weren't done and the lesions were small and the lesions advanced to stage four breast cancer, which has a less favorable prognosis than if you can intervene at stage one or stage two. And I've really seen a decline in that in terms of, that type of case walking through the door. And I think part of it is the focus is much more on early intervention in terms of being able to take, biopsying these lesions. I mean, there was more of a time when a physician would just kind of watch it and not really do much of anything. And, some of these cases would get away from them. And the next thing You had women coming in with larger lesions and metastases and into the lymph nodes and into other parts of their body. So, you know, that's one example. Colon cancer is another one. You're seeing many more colon cancer screenings. So you're not seeing patients coming in these advanced stages of colon cancer. So it does have a good effect on the system. And you really have to look at, too, at the percentage of viable claims that really catch people's attention, because those are the claims that are going to make a difference in terms of what healthcare providers can do. It does have a good effect in an indirect type of way.
Yeah, it makes sense. I think anybody who's in their 50s or 60s or 70s can look back and see where their primary care physician was or where hospitals were in terms of procedures and things that were done, and have a sense that things are much tighter today and better, in part because of technology and improvements in science and medicine. But clearly there are things directly related to lawsuits that have caught their attention, to use your phrase.
Yeah, and I mean, even things in hospital settings like timeouts, where everyone makes sure that they have the right patient, they have the right organ, the right side, everyone, it's a check and double check, right, in terms of giving, you know, good care, rather than kind of relying upon memory or whatever to treat a patient. And sometimes memory fails you or you make a mistake. So this is kind of a fail-safe way of doing it.
That's a great example, because a lot of medication error kinds of things, wrong medication, wrong patient, is prevented today because of suits and procedures now where there's all sorts of checks.
Absolutely, Bob. I think that's exactly it.
So why don't we take a look at the system? People think it's a wild ride out there, and doctors are exposed to frivolous suits. Have there been in recent years frivolous suits as you look at the situation?
I mean, there are a lot of checks and balances in the system. Are there no frivolous suits? My answer to that question is I don't know. But there are enough checks and balances built into the system that it's very rare for a frivolous suit to really go forward. First of all, the initial screening process is very, very complex. We take these cases on a contingency fee. Some lawyers advance costs, some lawyers do not, but they're still going to be costly, because you're going to have experts who are going to have to review the records and determine whether there's a breach for the standard of care. And not only do you have to prove negligence, but you've also have to prove causation, which is where many of these cases will be fought, because sometimes the doctor can be negligent, but the result would not have been any different, and therefore there's really no any type of causation. So the initial screening process is quite complex. It takes time.
And by that, you mean the lawyer initially screening the case?
The lawyer initially doing it, and then the lawyer has to get an expert. And experts are not lining up to testify against other doctors. And not only do you have to get an expert who will be willing to testify, you have to get someone who's not somebody who is what you would be considered or has a reputation as a hired gun, because if a case like that does go to trial, they're usually pretty effectively cross-examined and the plaintiff loses there. But once the case goes into, you know, the determination that there is a case and there is an expert, which, by the way, probably 90% of the cases get screened out just in that process alone.
In other words, the lawyer doesn't take the case. After
exactly.
All that work, all that money and all that effort going into it, the determination is made by the lawyer that it's not prudent to go forward, or we have no evidence of medical error and there's no case.
Exactly. And, you know, doing medical cases is not for the faint-hearted, because that's only the beginning. The fact that you have someone who will be willing to testify for you doesn't necessarily mean that you win the case, because you know you may have a 6'8" center, and then you know they come up with a 7-foot center, so they're going to have the right to defend these cases. And these cases are usually defended by very skilled, very competent lawyers who also don't have a shortage of doctors willing to testify for other doctors. So the deck is pretty stacked against the plaintiff right from the get-go. But then there are further checks and balances in the system, because what you have is what's called a medical malpractice tribunal system. And the tribunal system basically consists of a doctor, a lawyer, and a judge who determine whether or not the plaintiff has enough evidence to go forward with his case. So cases are lost at that level, at that hearing. And so it further kind of winnows the field, if you will. So the chance of a frivolous case getting through, could it? I suppose it could, but you're probably talking, you know, about a very, very rare bird. And then, of course, you still have what they call discovery and the trial, where discovery can even further weaken the plaintiff's case. And a trial is the, you know, a place where the ultimate decision is made. And it's very, very difficult to persuade juries that doctors have made errors.
Well, as a practical matter, there's no lawyer who's going to invest that amount of time screening a case and then filing a suit and involving the experts and all the costs involved with that. If it's frivolous, and a tribunal is there to screen out case by case any case that does not have a medical opinion backing it up, saying the defendant doctor or the hospital or the healthcare provider deviated from reasonably accepted practice.
I mean, you're absolutely right. And the thing is that if you don't have the support for your case, the court has absolutely no problem with dismissing it. I mean, sometimes even meritorious cases end up getting dismissed, and the plaintiff is then required to post a $6,000 bond. So basically, theoretically, in Massachusetts, there are no frivolous cases that got through the system.
And now that, when we come back, why don't we talk about the latest round of changes to the medical malpractice system, Bill, I know you're pretty familiar with, how that impacts it. But I think it's very important to leave what we've been saying with the understanding that the system is out there to compensate victims, help change healthcare, and really, I've never seen in the past 25 to 30 years anything approaching a frivolous case in that field. This is Bob Flynn talking with Frank Riccio, attorney Frank Riccio, about the law of malpractice. We'll be right back.
Cattugno Court Reporting and Stentel Transcription provides complete litigation support services to the legal community. These services include traditional court reporting, legal dictation and transcription, client meeting rooms and conference rooms. They also have video conferencing suites that use broadcast quality HD connections, perfect for meetings and interviews. Depositions can be conducted in their offices, or they can arrange alternate locations and have the option of high-quality professional videography. They also provide the legal community with the option of Lawyers Conference Center membership. For a low monthly rate, members have access to use all five of their offices for their meetings and receive special discounts on most of their services. Cattugno Court Reporting, with offices in Springfield, Boston, Worcester, Providence, and Chelmsford. Visit them on the web at cattugno.us. That's CATUOGNO.US. Or call them at 888-228-8646. Cattugno Court Reporting.
CBS News Update, I'm Jim Taylor. It's Sunday morning in Connecticut. Last night, this vigil in a community near Newtown. Later today, a memorial service for victims of the elementary school slaughter there.
presided over by President Obama. CBS's Steve Futterman is there.
It is something Mr. Obama has been called upon to do in the past. Tonight, he will do it again, become the nation's comforter-in-chief. The president will take part in a memorial service at the Newtown High School. He will join others for what's expected to be a very emotional gathering. Mr. Obama is also expected to meet with the families of those killed.
Authorities still attempting to establish a motive for those killings. Connecticut Governor Dan Malloy on CBS Face the Nation.
The investigation continues, as it will, until we turn over every page and every piece of evidence to understand what possibly might have motivated this. But this is mental illness. This is dressed in evil, I suppose.
CBS News Update. I'm Jim Taylor.
Here's the latest from the WCRN newsroom. What's been called a first-of-its-kind cancer clinic is set to officially open in a Boston Community Health Center. Clinic is a partnership between the Whittier Street Health Center in Roxbury and the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. Officials plan to celebrate that opening tomorrow. A rare collection of Revolutionary War-era autographs is going on the auction block in New Hampshire. The complete set of all 56 men who signed the Declaration of Independence was expected to fetch more than $1 million in an auction in Nashua. Amherst-based auction house RR Auction calls it the ultimate accomplishment in American autograph collecting, with only 40 complete collections of Declaration signers known in existence. Our forecast from the Weather Center, calling for snow and rain today, the high in the 30s. For tonight, freezing rain, low in the 30s. Rain and drizzle for tomorrow, high in the 40s. And Tuesday's outlook, rain coming to an end, high in the 40s.
Hank Stoltz and Sherman Whitman, Tom Cuddy on sports, and meteorologist Mark Rosenthal with the latest weather forecast. The WCRN Morning News, tomorrow morning at 5 on News and Talk Radio, WCRN.
Flynn Law Firm is focused on helping those seriously injured in workplace, construction, motor vehicle, and other accidents throughout Massachusetts. Bob Flynn has over 35 years' experience investigating, preparing, trying, and settling serious injury and wrongful death cases. If you or a loved one is injured in an accident at work or at a construction site or while driving, call Flynn Law Firm at 781-239-1005 for a free confidential appointment to discuss your case at a location convenient to you. Flynn Law Firm has its main office in Wellesley with offices by appointment in Boston, Worcester, and Springfield. Call 781-239-1005. You can learn more about Flynn Law Firm by visiting its website, flynnlawfirm.com, or by calling 781-239-1005. Put the knowledge and experience of Flynn Law Firm to work for you. Call 781-239-1005.
WCRN, Worcester, Boston.
To be on the program, call 508-438-0965. 508-438-0965. Now, back to Talking About the Law with attorney Bob Flynn.
Welcome back. This is Talking About the Law. And again, I'm Bob Flynn. Our guest today on Talking About the Law is attorney Frank Riccio, who is both a dentist and an attorney, and he's a trial lawyer. And we're talking about something he knows very well, the preparation and trial of medical malpractice cases and some of the bigger issues with those cases. Frank, welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you.
We were talking just before the break about the current system, which really is very expensive to get a case going and which has a built-in tribunal system, a need to have your own expert saying a doctor did wrong and caused injury, and to get by the tribunal. So you have multiple checks and balances that are both financial and expert opinion blocking a case that does not have merit from going forward. Further changes have recently been made on the healthcare medical malpractice front. Tell us about those if you could.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. I mean, basically, as of November 4th of this year, there have been some changes made to the health care law, in my personal opinion, to make it much more difficult for these cases in terms of these cases going forward. But by the same token, you know, the intent is really to try to get these cases resolved. So obviously I have to keep an open mind. But essentially what happens now is there are procedural obstacles that plaintiffs must comport with or comply with. And one of them has to do with essentially the notice of claim to the physician. Back in the day, as of last month, we would basically send a notice letter to the doctor, usually asking the doctor to send the claim, the letter to the insurance carrier and have that insurance carrier get back to us. And the insurance carrier would typically ask us for all the information that essentially will now be required in this presentment letter or this notice letter. And so basically, it kind of codifies with what most of us have been doing anyways. The problem or the issue that I see is what comportment with that notice letter really means, because it requires more than what we've ever done before in the past, including things like not only sending records, but stating our theories of the case with additional things that we've never had to do before, such as stating what the applicable standard of care was, which is not the law in Massachusetts, and also stating what could be done differently, which is also not the law in Massachusetts as it stands right now. But it is part of this presentment requirement.
In the big picture, looking at that this presentment requirement is not anything particularly unusual or new to lawyers. Suits against cities and towns have presentment requirements that are a little different than this one, but the general concept is the same. But I gather the idea is to start a ball rolling, which will hopefully lead to the potential defendant, his insurance company or her insurance company or its insurance company, responding point by point to a letter from a plaintiff's attorney and seeing if the case can resolve at that early stage before it's actually a lawsuit.
It's complex in the sense that the defendant is required to respond, but they don't have to respond. And if they don't respond, then what they do is we can then file suit. Now, this presentment requirement, or this as I'm calling it, just for lack of a better word, requires a so-called cooling off period of 6 months, which, you know, there's really, I mean, most of these medical cases really don't need a cooling off period, so it's kind of pointless. But the problem that I have with this particular law is whether or not there's going to be adequate, or the letter is going to be, or the presentment is going to comport with what the requirements are. I mean, I could see as a procedural obstacle the defense saying, well, their letter did not comport with the law, and therefore the case could be dismissed. And so it's sort of another burden that the plaintiff has to deal with, ensure of doing, you know, in to make sure that it's done right. So that has always been a concern that's a concern that I have with this particular law.
Well, the problem is whenever you create an obligation on the part of someone, for example, in this case, a plaintiff, to do A, B, C, and D, the other side is always going to be in a position to complain that A, B, C, and D, or any part of them, were not satisfied properly. And that's in the nature of the adversarial business we're in.
Right. If I was in their shoes, I would do the same thing. So the question is whether or not this information that's given to the defendant will be enough to make them want to go to the negotiating table to get a case resolved, as opposed to them defending it and again, running up their costs in terms of the defense of it. So none of us have really had enough experience with this to know exactly, you know, where it's heading, what it's going to do, and that thing. So, you know, we're kind of just going along.
We're not trying to turn this into a continuing legal education program at all, but I did have a thought that I haven't shared with you about your concern really is that a defendant would move to dismiss a case brought claiming that there was not enough evidence submitted about causation in the original presentation or something like that. How about plaintiffs moving to strike answers from defendants that don't respond at all because the defendant is required to file a parallel response or serve one on the plaintiff's attorney?
Well, they are
addressing the same issues.
They are, but it really has no teeth. In other words, what happens is if they don't respond, then the interest goes back to the point when the notice of claim
there's
first.
There's no teeth to that. That's
so
right.
there's no teeth to that at all. And so the interest rate, just so people know, the usual tort rate is 12%, but with Med Mal in this particular case, I know it's a very small percentage, you know, probably under 4%. So it's a small amount.
So the whole idea here is to try to put, before there's a lawsuit, the parties in a position. It's kind of theoretical. It's kind of Pollyanna-ish in a way to settle a case, though. And one big reason, what are the obstacles to settlement, Frank?
Well, I mean, there are many obstacles to settlement. First of all, statistically, doctors that do go to trial end up getting verdicts probably about 90% of the time in their favor. So that's one statistic that has to be looked at. The merits of the case, I mean, obviously, you know, there are cases that are difficult to prove or may not be meritorious. You know, I think those are the real main obstacles, other than maybe lack of information. I mean, there may be personal attitudes between attorneys and adjusters. I mean, a lot of the adjusters are very sophisticated, very knowledgeable. It's a system that did essentially the whole tort system, the traditional system, works. So I look at this as more of an added burden. You know, maybe another snowdrift that we have to climb over. I mean, there's an apology provision in it as well. And again, I don't know how that's going to work because Massachusetts has never really been part of that. But physicians technically are required to at least comport with that statute if, in fact, they acknowledge an error. But the language is very vague, and I just have no idea where that's going to head.
When we come back, I'd like to hit one other aspect. I think a big impediment to settling these cases is the fact that there's a reporting. It's public record if a doctor settles. If this statute was amended to make it non-reportable if the case settles during this window of opportunity, more cases would settle, maybe. We'll be right back. This is Bob Flynn talking with attorney Frank Riccio about medical malpractice.
The Jeff Santos Show, weekday afternoons at 2 on News and Talk Radio, AM 830 WCRN.
Cattugno Court Reporting and Stentel Transcription provides complete litigation support services to the legal community. These services include traditional court reporting, legal dictation and transcription, client meeting rooms and conference rooms. They also have video conferencing suites that use broadcast quality HD connections, perfect for meetings and interviews. Depositions can be conducted in their offices, or they can arrange alternate locations and have the option of high-quality professional videography. They also provide the legal community with the option of Lawyers Conference Center membership. For a low monthly rate, members have access to use all 5 of their offices for their meetings and receive special discounts on most of their services. Cattugno Court Reporting, with offices in Springfield, Boston, Worcester, Providence, and Chelmsford.
Visit them on the web at catugno.us. That's CATUOGNO.US. Or call them at 888-228-8646. Catugno Court Reporting.
All you need to start the day. The WCRN Morning News. Tomorrow morning at 5 on News and Talk Radio WCRN.
Flynn Law Firm is focused on helping those seriously injured in workplace, construction, motor vehicle, and other accidents throughout Massachusetts. Bob Flynn has over 35 years' experience investigating, preparing, trying, and settling serious injury and wrongful death cases. If you or a loved one is injured in an accident at work or at a construction site or while driving, call Flynn Law Firm at 781-239-1005 for a free confidential appointment to discuss your case at a location convenient to you. Flynn Law Firm has its main office in Wellesley with offices by appointment in Boston, Worcester, and Springfield. Call 781-239-1005. You can learn more about Flynn Law Firm by visiting its website, flynnlawfirm.com, or by calling 781-239-1005. Put the knowledge and experience of Flynn Law Firm to work for you. Call 781-239-1005. To be on the program, call 508-438-0965. 508-438-0965. Now, back to Talking About the Law with attorney Bob Flynn.
Welcome back. This is Talking About the Law. I'm Bob Flynn. Today we're talking with attorney Frank Riccio about the law of medical malpractice, some of the changes, what its purposes are, and what its purposes are not. We were talking just before the break, Frank, about the new statute that tries to create a window of opportunity for case resolution. And I brought up at the end of our discussion, I really do believe that doctors who have a right, and they do, in their policies of insurance to grant or withhold permission to settle would be much more inclined to grant that permission if they weren't concerned about a public record being created, which in fact it would be today. And if during this window of opportunity, so to speak, if they settle during that period of time or grant their permission during that period of time, perhaps the law should be changed so that that their settlement is not made public.
It's definitely an option to consider, because essentially what happens is if doctors settle, they do have to report it. They have to report it to the National Practitioner Data Bank. And they have to report it to the state. And sometimes the settlements are legitimate. It's like anybody having a bad day. It doesn't necessarily mean that because you've settled a case, you were a bad doctor. I mean, the focus is on, even though they use the word malpractice, I mean, that implies malfeasance. That's not what happens. If somebody is involved in a more high-risk specialty like OBGYN, the chances of them getting sued is much greater than somebody who is not involved in a higher risk specialty. So, you know, the reporting requirements, one size fits all, doesn't really always work. And you know, as far as perhaps getting cases resolved, you know, that may be one idea to at least make it a little bit easier on the medical facility or the physician in terms of agreeing to getting a case resolved for the plaintiff.
Actually, the whole idea behind that reporting was to give consumers an idea of whether a doctor had committed an error. But the fact is, reporting any settlements, regardless of when they occur, you're not doing that. Maybe we should just be having the law, all the laws should be changed to simply report verdicts or judgments, arbitration judgments. And that would definitely promote the resolution of cases without all of this expenditure of unnecessary money on both sides. And settlements do not reflect wrongdoing. They reflect almost the opposite. There's an issue. and the parties have agreed to resolve it without a final decision as to whether there was an error or no error.
I think it's definitely something worth looking into.
I do, too. This act also has a provision. Perhaps you could tell us about this, apology, or what's that all about?
Well, it's really unclear. In the past, apologies or statements of regret or sympathy were not admissible in court anyways. So I don't know. I mean, basically, there's now a statute which essentially says if there's some type of unforeseen event, then unexpected consequence that's serious, that the doctor has a statutory obligation to disclose that. Again, a lot of it is the devil is in the details. Doctors ethically have a duty to disclose anyways. A doctor cannot cover up, cannot pretend something didn't happen, mislead, anything like that. So I'm not sure exactly where that's all heading. It'll probably get played out in litigation, and we'll just have to go from there.
And the idea there is to try to create a bond. The language of the statute uses words like statements, affirmations, gestures expressing benevolence, regret, apology, sympathy, commiseration, condolence, compassion. They're not admissible.
Right. They generally weren't anyways. And sometimes the fight on these cases is a doctor may admit liability or may admit negligence or they messed up, but the fight is going to be on the cause of the harm anyways, if the result wouldn't make a difference. For example, if you have somebody who had an x-ray taken, lung film, and there was a spot on the lung by a radiologist, and 3 months later the patient goes in and starts coughing up blood and they take an x-ray and they say, my God, that spot was there 3 months ago, that's definitely liability. The radiologist should have picked up on that. But the problem is the result wouldn't have made a difference in terms of the outcome. So there's a lot to litigate about in these cases, and many of these cases are actually defended not so much on liability issues or negligence issues, but on what we call causation.
Well, there's a lot in that statute. It's brand new. A lot of the terms are kind of vague, but we're going in that direction, I gather, of trying to see medical malpractice cases resolved. My big concern is, however, that I'm not sure that without protecting the doctors from public disclosure, that cooling off period will really succeed. It might have a good chance if that other component was added. And you're right. You're absolutely right. There's a lot of shells in that statute, but there's no, if you don't comply with a shell, there's no what happens.
Yeah, I mean, the intent is really to get these cases resolved early, those cases that can be resolved early. And so, again, the devil will be in the details. I don't know. I mean, our office will provide information, but I don't know in general what other plaintiff's lawyers do. If it gets us to the bargaining table or negotiation sooner, then it's something that's workable. I mean, there are other alternatives besides jury trial. You absolutely need jury trials because without jury trials, the system would not be honest. But there are other ways of handling things like non-binding mediation and even arbitration in certain select cases, which usually are more cost-effective than your traditional jury trial that can not only uses government resources but also uses private resources in terms of the time. So if you can get it resolved within that period, that's a good thing.
The thing that bothers me about the medical malpractice field at the moment is it's really it's either or. It's forcing cases to trial. That could be settled, and ultimately the system would work probably better for everybody if parties were able to make rational settlements. I've, as you know, I do a lot of mediations and arbitrations as a neutral, and I've completely come around to the idea to get parties talking and with concrete information, sharing the information, exploring what their problems are, you know, where they see the issues. People are often talking at cross purposes, and sharing common information is so helpful. Frank, quick question, future of MedMel. What do you see happening in the immediate future? 30 seconds.
30 seconds. I think things will pretty much stay the same. Our screening process is not be different. Everything is, you know, we will prepare our cases as if we are going to try them, whether they settle them or not. And so, you know, I don't think there's going to be major changes at all. And, you know, I think things will probably pretty much stay the same.
Well, this has been another great show. I appreciate it, Frank. You're a great, great guest, and you're a much better lawyer, too. You're just a wonderful lawyer. Frank and I work a lot on these kinds of cases together, and I'm glad to have your friendship. If you want to reach Frank, you can go to his website, Law Offices of Frank Riccio, or as always, you can contact any of my guests through this Flynn Law Firm website. To the people in Newtown, we join you, our prayers are with you, and the families there, Merry Christmas, best we can to everybody else, and Happy New Year. Next week, we're going to have a show focused on personal injury law, and the week after that, another holiday week, we're going to have Ray Catuno, probably a couple of court reporters, and we're going to be talking about the trials and tribulations of court reporters in our judicial system. This is Bob Flynn talking about the law. See you next week.
Save big bucks at countless destinations throughout Worcester County. Earn points, win prizes, get exclusive access to WOW.